You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for August 26, 2016. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from the very heart of the insanely lucrative alt-left conspiracy, it's the Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
Insanely lucrative. It's the lifestyles of the rich and famous alt-left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
We are begging you, Mr. Soros. We are begging you, stop sending us money.
Especially in small bills, really.
Really. It's we're insulating the goddamn walls with this stuff. Did you ever see Breaking Bad, Mr. Soros? It's like that. We just spray it for silverfish and measure and weigh it nowadays.
Right, we just weigh the $100 bills that are coming
in. We don't know what to do. It's so crazy. So much money being on the left.
Yeah, but I think that it might be the secret, though, Driftglass, to instant success, is if we could convince people that there's an alt-left.
Yes, and we're in charge of it.
I don't know which part of that is more ridiculous, but anyway.
Well, and then Michael Steele will rename No Labels as alt-center. So
There you go.
And then steal our good stuff. You're going to steal our good stuff. But yeah, this has been because they're starving over on the right, Blue Gal. They get nothing. Nobody gives them book contracts or anything.
That's not true. But in fact, let's start this week with the book of the week. Because that happened early on in the week that your friend and mine, Ann Coulter, has a new book out.
I think we should pimp it. We don't talk about Ann Coulter, or we rarely talk about people like that. We have a sort of an informal rule that the obviously crazy people who are deep inside the Rush Limbaugh dome aren't worth commenting on because they're just, a force of nature.
Well,
I
think a lot of us back in around 2006 agreed to stop blogging about her because she would say anything to get our attention. And the whole point of her being so awful was to be written about. And so
awful,
we were just feeding the beast,
awful,
literally.
Awful being suggesting murdering people.
Right.
And blowing up the UN.
Yeah.
And blowing up the New York Times. And just insanely hateful bullshit pouring out of her mouth. And for her crimes, Blue Gal, she is only...
she's only what?
Book dealer.
She's only
syndicated.
She's syndicated in our local paper. Yes,
she's syndicated.
She is.
And many, 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 many other newspapers around the country, along with getting a book deal whenever she wants. So, but this book,
which is called, I really think we should promote it now because it's about to be remaindered any minute. And it's only been out for 4 days. It's called In Trump We Trust.
Yeah.
Which going beyond, I mean, before we found out how devastatingly bad her timing was, everyone was saying how blasphemous the title of this book was. It's In Trump We Trust, E Pluribus Awesome! ! And it came out on the day that Donald Trump decided that he wasn't going to follow Ann Coulter's prescription for deporting illegal immigrants
anymore.
Undocumented immigrants, as we on the alt-left call them. This is going to be our new mother and a patriot, I swear to God.
It has to be.
And so she lost her mind on Twitter because this whole book that she'd written with Trump's name on it in big red letters isn't true anymore because Donald Trump has now allowed the studio audience at Hannity to raise their hands and vote for how he's going to manage immigration policy instead of going to Ann Coulter and doing what she says.
Yes. Well, and also essentially walking back over the broken bodies of 16 opponents and taking their ideas and saying, the ideas that he shredded them over, mocked them over, called them bad Americans for even suggesting such a thing.
Mm-hmm.
He's now basically laying them all out on a table and saying, what do you think? Maybe this, maybe that. I don't know. We should think about it. Maybe this is a good idea. And as I understand it, because I have absolutely no intention of ever reading anything Ann Coulter ever writes.
Mm-hmm.
As I understand it, the predicate for this book is ignore all the millions of other lies that Donald Trump has told. Who cares? Benghazi, Benghazi. The one thing you can be sure of is that he's never going to go back on his immigration promise.
And that's the most important thing, right?
And he and that popped up, and Donald Trump walked right into the middle of Times. This is a variation of something I'm stealing from somebody else. So Donald Trump finally did walk into the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot his own immigration policy in the head.
Yeah.
He shot Ann Coulter's book in the head. And it's got, can you imagine making a movie called Being John Malkovich? And John Malkovich comes out and says, you fucking fuckers.
Yeah.
You want a shitty, wow, this is the shittiest movie I've ever seen. I would stay away from it if I were you. I believe the exact opposite. Because she put, again, she put his name in the title to put more money in her pocket, because that's what stupid people pay for. The entire line of awful books Ann Coulter writes is specifically targeted to remove money from bigots and morons and put it in her pocket. And that's the only reason she writes anything. And
yeah. Well, and she also, people did make a point of one other passage in her book, the new book about Trump, where she does make excuses for Donald Trump imitating the reporter from the New York Times who is disabled. Uh-huh. And she actually does an entire paragraph where she says that he was not doing an imitation based on this man's disability. He was, and I quote, because I'm reading from the page on the book that a person posted to Twitter.
Uh-huh.
That's not the imitation Trump was doing. He was doing a standard retard.
Uh-huh.
You know, this wasn't a specific disability. He was just in general making fun of retard. So,
and here's an important fact I would like to remind people of, a very obscure one that Mr. Charlie Pierce of Esquire reminded America of just last week. Kellyanne Conway.
Yeah.
Used to be Kellyanne Fitzpatrick, I believe.
Ah.
And she and Ann Coulter come out of the same psychotic political womb in that they were both birthed during the Clinton years. They both made their bones lying about Bill Clinton and spreading filthy rumors about Bill Clinton and pimping every rogue rumor and fake scandal about Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
So they go back for years. This plague of people, these zombies who are fucking this country up, go back decades, and they have, and they're persistent. They never go away. It doesn't matter what you hit them with. It doesn't matter how wrong they are. It doesn't matter how awful they are. It doesn't matter if they show their ass in the middle of Michigan Avenue on Sunday afternoon. Somehow, some way, through the miracle of Rolodexes and personal contacts, they will find their way back into your lives a week or a month from now. Speaking of which, Alex Jones.
Well, I want to get to that. Let's talk about the first half of the week and how there was the Clinton Foundation was the story for a few days.
Yeah.
And I was really impressed with how much pushback there was within the world of media about what the Clinton Foundation is, what they do, and how they do it in a moral and ethical manner.
Yep.
I do think that Hillary Clinton or her surrogates need to polish their answer on that. And the answer that I would give, and I'm not, you know, I'm alt left, so she's not going to listen to me, but the answer I would give is, look, I am not going to do anything at all to make changes to the Clinton Foundation to satisfy the critics who will never give up on destroying me and everything I stand for.
Right.
Because it will be something else next week. So I am not going to change anything to hinder the good that the Clinton Foundation does. And everyone admits that the Clinton Foundation does amazing things. In no way am I going to make one single change to satisfy people who will never be satisfied.
If I
can hear you.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
If I may quote from the late Steve Gilliard.
Yeah, yeah.
2005.
Yeah.
And I won't go through the whole thing, but he does name the National Review, who are still around. Instapundit, still around. All of these, again, all of these really scummy people from the Bush administration years, Clinton years, they're all still around. They're also making money hand over fist, lying to the same morons and telling the same lies with slightly different topic headings.
Mm-hmm.
But he wrote this long post in 2005 about, I don't want, he said, I'm tired of people acting like these people can be reasoned with or talked to.
Yeah.
This was 2005.
Yeah.
They don't want to talk. They want to drive us away into a corner and ridicule our ideas. I'm not writing to make conservatives happy. I want them to hate my opinions. I'm not interested in debating them. I want to stop them. I think exactly. It's that clear. I don't want to debate Kellyanne Conway or Ann Coulter. I don't want to debate whoever they're going to be rolling out on my liberal TV for me to gawk at and wonder that some scumbag is being given airtime who 2 days ago was writing the most racist filth online. Right. I want to stop them. My goal is to stop them and to empower as many people as possible with the vocabulary to put these people in their place. They belong back in the sewer. They run one of our two major political parties. And here's the terrible secret. They have for years.
Mm-hmm.
This is
mm-hmm.
They just finally poked their head. Donald Trump is just the permission slip for these people to finally poke their head above the surface, wipe the camouflage off their faces and say, we were here all along.
Yeah.
This has been the Republican Party all along. And that's what's freaking people out.
Yep, it sure is. And I want to say, too, in talking about Steve Gilliard, that his voice came through this week on television. I was so proud of Charles Blow, who was on CNN talking, debating, quote unquote, or being on with CNN, which, you know, the CNN model, as you have said several times, is let's put on a left guy and let's put on a right guy. Make them fight. Make them fight.
Yeah.
And so they put on Charles Blow and they put on, let me see who the other guy is, Lavelle, who is a Trump supporter, African-American Trump supporter.
Yeah, a clown.
And Charles Blow just said, who is this person and why is he on TV?
Right.
To his opponent.
To his face.
He said, look, here's the deal, right? I'm reading from the transcript.
Uh-huh.
Donald Trump is a bigot. There's no way to get around it. And Lavelle says, wow. Because why would you say that, right? Blow continues. Anybody who supports, accepts that, supports it. Anybody who supports it is promoting it. And that's what makes you a part of the bigotry itself. You have to decide whether or not you want to be a part of the bigotry that is Donald Trump. You have to make a decision because your party has now decided that this is the person, this con man is your front man. And you have to decide whether or not you are going to follow that. Don Lemon, the third African-American on the stage, to CNN's credit, says, that's a lot. First, I'm literally running out of time. Okay.
You're running out of something.
He's running out of something. And so Lavelle tries to say, I'm sorry that you can't answer my questions about Hillary Clinton.
Quickly, pivot.
Yeah, pivot. Charles Blow says, and this is when he starts to just channel Steve Gilliard, I don't know you, and I don't want to talk to you, and I don't want to answer your question. And Lavelle doesn't know what to do at this point, you know, because his job is to sit there and be, you know, the two scorpions are supposed to fight in the arena and then part ways and collect their paychecks. And he said, I don't want to do that. And so Lavelle says, well, you know, this is what the Clinton campaign does. And Charles Blow said, I'm not part of the Clinton campaign. I am a black man in America, and I know a bigot when I see a bigot, and you are supporting a bigot, and that makes you a part of the bigotry that's Donald Trump. End of story. And so it's not, this isn't a debate. I'm a black man. He's a bigot. I've known bigots all my life. He's a bigot. If you support him, you're supporting bigotry. And by the way, your whole party nominated him to be your standard bearer. End of story. And we're not going to debate any of that.
And
so
let's be
it
clear.
Really did remind me. I was sitting there thinking, I have to show this to Dirk Glass and say, this is full Steve Gilliard right there.
Well, and
so many
clear.
People have said after that, oh, yeah, I really miss Steve. You know,
this guy was hired
mm-hmm.
to be a black face for the Trump campaign.
Exactly. Yeah.
And there is a word for people who I don't know what that word is, mm-hmm. but it should be. Maybe the term we can use from now on is Michael Steele. Maybe when you look in the dictionary under, hey, This is a black man who rented himself out to a bunch of bigots for money in order to front for them. That term, like Santorum is a frothy anal discharge, this term could be Michael Steele.
Mm-hmm.
Because Michael Steele has done extraordinarily well for himself. And he is... And his explanation is always a classic, what I term Republican detachment disorder.
Right, right.
There were bigots in the party before I showed up. I came and ran the party, and for a period of time, there were no bigots in the Republican Party. Then when I left, they all came back. Mm-hmm. It's so weird how that happened. It's so strange. But you know what? You know the real problem, Blue Gal, is both sides.
Well, both sides. And all of this started to bubble up to the surface in part because Donald Trump went before a mostly white audience and started to lecture African-American voters about they have nothing to lose by voting for him.
What do you have to lose? Huh? What do you have to lose? Which is the last line of every con man who's losing the con.
Yeah.
You know, give me your goddamn money is the last one.
Yep.
But, you know, it's really the question of what the hell is Donald doing? Is he setting to take over a network or form his own television empire or whatever? Is important, but really secondary to what we saw this week, which was Hillary Clinton's speech.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to get to that. I just wanted to remind everyone that Joe Scarborough this morning, we're recording this on Friday, said that Republicans are losing opportunities by not reaching out to African-American voters.
Yeah.
Because we have so much to offer them, really, when you get down to it. And this was a moment when, honestly, I wanted to be on Morning Joe.
I know.
Oftentimes I want to be on Morning Joe with a mallet just to bang people, you know, just to flip the desk over and say, I'm done with you people. But I, at that statement, I would have sat there very calmly and looked at Joe Scarborough and said, Joe, who have Republicans been reaching out to for the past, 8 years, 40 years, since Nixon 68? You know, who have Republicans? And I mean that in a sincere way. Who has Mitch McConnell been courting as a voter for the past 7.5 years?
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't been African-American voters. And it has been a very specific group of voters that they have been catering to. And before we move on to Hillary's speech, which I do want to move on to, did you watch the little web extra that Samantha Bee put out where her reporters went around during the hallways of the Republican National Convention asking them what Donald Trump's policies are and when was America great again?
Oh, yes, I did see that. Yes.
And it was when was America great again? The 40s and 50s and the 60s and the 70s and that's it.
Yeah.
And what are Hillary Clinton's policies? You mean besides make America great again? Yes.
Yeah. Oh,
What are Donald Trump's policies? You mean besides make America great again? And then there's this pause. Well, hating Hillary, that's one.
Hate Hillary. Yeah. That's policy.
Those are the policies of the Republican Party. Are hate Obama, which we're going to transfer real easily to hate Hillary. In fact, we've done that, right? I mean,
sure, it's done.
Kenyan usurper became locker up. With break in between.
Well, that's the advantage of having 20 or 30 million reprogrammable idiots.
Yeah, yeah.
Because all you have to do is telling them Saddam Hussein 9/11, Saddam Hussein 9/11. And suddenly Saddam Hussein is in charge of 9/11. And they will swear on the lives of their children after you've invaded the wrong country that, and then you come back to George Bush going, I never said that. Where'd you ever get that idea? Well, this is the great open secret about this country.
Mm-hmm.
This vast pool of racist morons that the Republican Party completely depends on and cannot talk about publicly. And that's the great grace of Donald Trump is now we're talking about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he really has sort of been, he's opened a window.
And he's bringing it up. He's bringing it up on the stage. So then you have to talk about it, right? Yeah.
The what I wrote years and years ago about the pretty hate machine, the reactor, the nuclear reactor. All the coolant is gone.
Yep.
And it's actually melting down right in front of us, as predicted. And we're watching the results. And it is not an extraordinary thing to see a bunch of bigots and morons and haters and people who exploit them freaking out that the secret is now out about who they really are, what they really believe. What is fascinating and depressing and exhilarating and funny to see all at once is all of the people who had been collaborators enablers trying to straddle this gigantic chasm, their little both-siders legs.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
they can't come out and say liberals were right. They can't fucking do it. But they can't side with Trump. So what's left? What's the other? Again, brings us to the actual, I think, text of Hillary Clinton's speech.
Okay. Could you plug your microphone in a little tighter? I'm
sure.
Just going to say this. Just ask that.
It's plugged in as high as it'll go.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Sorry.
Yeah, that does bring us to Hillary Clinton's alt-right speech. And the first question I want to ask you about that, Driftglass, is to whom do you think, because this is what you always ask in writing, who is your audience?
Yes, it absolutely is. Yeah.
Who was Hillary Clinton's audience for this speech?
David Brooks. Specifically David Brooks.
And he was speaking directly to David Brooks, only
and I know
to David
that,
Brooks.
And I know that David Brooks, I will write up at some point or not, about the responsibility, how he longs for gracious leaders.
Ah.
And maybe when Hillary wins, she'll be gracious in victory, something, words to that effect. And she'll be humble and realize that, you know, we're all flawed human beings and we all make mistakes. And basically it's saying, please don't hurt me.
Yeah, please put your castrating knife away.
Yeah, when you win, please don't bring up all the crazy enabling bullshit that I've been writing over the years that has made all this horror show possible. Let's all be gracious and be gracious in victory, Hillary, and don't kick my nuts up into my throat.
This speech also reminds me, too, because it was so directed at suburban Republicans and suburban swing voters.
Independence.
I'm an independent.
All
I voted Republican in 12 presidential elections in a row, but I'm an independent.
But I think it had two targets. If this question is still open, I think it had two targets. It had, I think, two targets because a good speech goes after multiple
audiences, right?
And I think the first one was the suburban, you know, Republican who Donald Trump is desperately trying to convince that he's not a bigot,
right?
Like going in front of all white audiences and talking about Negroes, about how open-minded he is. It's just, for God's sakes, what do you have to lose? That speech is targeted to white people in the suburbs who are terrified but love voting Republican because of the tax breaks and because liberals are evil. That was target number one. Target number two was Donald Trump himself.
Mm.
Bait him into talking about this because he cannot say, and this was a big ass. I'm going to use a term advisedly. Actually, I'm not going to use the term because it's so fraught with racist overtones, and I don't intend it that way. So I'll just – it's a trap.
Mm-hmm.
It was a big old bear trap that she laid for him. Essentially, I dare you to come out and start talking.
Yeah, and I think she was doing that in a 13-dimensional chess, three-dimensional chess way because not only did she bait Trump, and repeat what Trump said over and over again, which is basically baiting the media.
Yeah.
Because most of her speech was about, here is what Trump said. Here is what Trump did. Here is who Trump retweeted. Here is the time Trump did not disavow the support, even though he knew the background of the Klan leader or the white supremacist. Here is the point at which he used white supremacist imagery in his advertising and Twitter activity. And it was all about, connected. Go ahead.
Uh-huh. I just didn't want to forget that. And here are the headlines from the magazine of the guy that he just hired to run his campaign.
Right. And here is the supporter that he's had at the convention and that he has quoted. He is quoting from these websites that say these things, and this man who is a Sandy Hook truther, which got a gasp in the audience, you know. Yeah. And the power of baiting Alex Jones, which I thought was brilliant. Everyone said, don't bring up people like that. Then the enablers were freaking out because that just gives him more power. You know, what it does is all of a sudden – Alex Jones, which everybody could have predicted, anyone who has any familiarity with him at all would know for a fact that Alex Jones would jump up on his desk and dance a jig about how legitimizing it is for his ideas and his truth that Hillary Clinton mentioned him in his speech. And then he would sit back down and start repeating. Yeah. And then he would sit down and start repeating his crazy ass bullshit again. Right. Yeah. And you know, and of course, Donald Trump, total victory. He's going to have total victory. He's going to get 100% of the black vote and all the gay vote and law and order, because they all want law and order. So, yeah, Donald Trump's going to win. And of course, Sandy Hook isn't, it never happened and was done with actors.
Right. Child actors.
Child actor. I'm laughing because if I don't laugh, I will sob into the microphone. Mm-hmm. That someone would be so horrible as to say that. But yeah, I mean, if Trump is this bad, and he is this bad, let's see the cancer. Let's see the whole tumor, mm-hmm, and look at it. And that's right. What she's doing. She's taking Michael Steele's head and shoving it right at Trump and saying, look, and don't deny that this is what is happening. Like you could with Mitt Romney.
Sure.
And with John McCain. We've had this all along. This is how you run a Republican primary. And then you pivot. And then you pretend that the people who are the bigots and the monsters that voted you in don't exist. And
right.
You get your tax cuts and you get your regulatory reform so that, mm-hmm, you can pollute some more. And those are the only two things that the Republican Party even cares about, is tax cuts for billionaires and making sure polluters and fossil fuel industries can do whatever the hell they want. And, mm-hmm, as long as we get that, we will give voice for, you know, a year and a half to thugs, to the Black Panther parties, to... I mean,
sure.
I can go on. You know, we'll make sure there's lots of wiggle room for all of the pseudo Klansmen and real Klansmen and Confederate flag wavers and all those
Klansmen.
Folks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this also it also depends. And again, this was a really tectonic speech,
mm-hmm,
because it was also directed squarely at the Beltway media.
That's what I said in our notes, which is,
yeah,
this alt-right speech is directed at the 400 people that Hillary Clinton has to talk to.
Right.
And has to say, you guys cannot be neutral in this.
Because the game has always been, just as you said, we're going to scratch all of the lunatics behind the ears and pat their bottoms and,
right,
make them happy during the primary.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll all agree to pretend it never happened.
Right,
right, Mark Halperin? Right, John Heilman, right, mm-hmm, Chuck Todd, and everybody nods because that's the game. We depend on the worst scum in America to nominate Republicans, but then we just all collectively agree that those people don't exist and we will not talk about them.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm,
this really finally dragged them into the spotlight. I don't think it'll last because
it'll be very interesting to see how what her long game is in terms of the next 70 days or so of this campaign. Uh-huh. This morning, I thought it was so delicious that she phoned it in to Morning Joe.
Yeah, literally. Literally.
Literally. Like, uh-huh, I know what to do.
Yeah.
I'll phone in an interview,
yeah,
to Morning Joe and be the what Trump can't do anymore, I,
right,
will do. And,
uh-huh,
I will get... And her interview went for like 20 minutes, almost,
yeah,
20 minutes.
Yeah.
And she wouldn't let Joe interrupt her. That was the other part that was
talk
beautiful.
Over. Just,
yeah,
roll
she,
over.
She just kept right going. No, I'm going to get my point across. And he kept going, and she just, nope,
and
I'm not going to let you interrupt. Yep.
And what she was bulldozing was the measurable, wonderful accomplishments of the Clinton Foundation.
Right.
Here's all the people that we provided this drug to. Here's all the people that we provided those services to. Here are all the lives we saved. Here's all the money we raised. And she just kept. So it wasn't gish galloping. It wasn't.
No.
It was just, no. You want to talk about the foundation? Fine. Oh, and since I'm on the phone, you can't read my body language. You can't shut me up. I can just keep talking. And
that was the advantage that you gave Trump for months. Right.
When you were busy coddling him and turning him into your
king. Flattering him as the millionaire New Yorker that you would need after the election. And I am impressed, frankly, that Mika Brzezinski has mentioned more than once that there is a loss to her social network,
yes,
with Donald Trump having become this awful person. And,
yep,
that she admits, she admits that is a factor in her disgust. And so there's an honesty there that I find I am pleased to see. Let me put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to now pivot. We're going to pivot.
Pivot.
Because we're the alt-left. We're the alt-left. We know how to pivot.
Uh-huh.
Because we had a very clear proof this week, Driftglass, that this election is essentially over.
Yeah.
Particularly for the Beltway media. The Beltway media is packing it in.
Exactly.
And that is Meet the Press, your friend and mine.
Yeah.
Started cleaning up after the Republican Party, even earlier than we thought they would.
Yes.
We thought that the rebranding would start in January.
Yeah. During the inauguration.
Right. But there is a web feature at NBCNews.com called Meet the Press Beyond Trump.
Yes.
I'm not making this up.
No. And I showed it to you, and then we got you a new keyboard because you spit all over it.
I barfed all over it.
What? Did you just make this shit up, Driftglass?
No, you Photoshopped this. This is not real.
No.
This is a little Photoshop you put up on Twitter, right?
Well, here's the thing. I will lead into it with this. It was, I believe I saw it come across my desktop as a panel of 9 conservatives discuss the future of conservatism after Trump.
It is. Yep.
And my response was followed by a panel of 9 liberals who just sit around for 2 hours saying, "We fucking told you so." But that will never happen because liberals are not allowed on television.
Right.
Because we say things like that. We won't swear because I know when not to swear. I know how to be polite in public. I can wear a tie and shoes. But people who go on television and just would sit there, feet up on the desk, having coffee, going, "Hey, Mark Halperin, fucking told you so.
Told you so.
Chuck Todd, guess what? Oh, guess what I have under my desk for you? I have a big present. It's in my pants. I told you so." That would be great television. That would make awesome radio, but they're never going to allow that to happen. So instead, we get 9 conservatives on MSNBC discussing what the future.
Well, they're discussing. They aren't on TV yet.
No.
But this is the panel. This is the Rolodex, the mini. This is the thing that Chuck Todd's producer has the gold paper clips clicked to for when he needs a Republican or he or she needs a Republican to come and debate the future of the party. Right. And so they only have one person. There's 4 paths that are to look ahead. This is the presumption of this is so clear is that, first of all, the GOP has a road ahead. Right. Because they can't be destroyed.
No.
This is always going to be 2 parties, equally both siderist. And we will get into that in a minute. But that just exploded all over the place like a water balloon. Just both sides went everywhere. But there are 4 paths ahead for the Republican Party. And we're only going to really focus on one. But let me go over them. Let me just a quick review of 4 of them. Number 1 is Trump takes over the GOP, which is highly unlikely because they only have one person representing that side, and that's Carl Paladino. Because the elites, I'm in construction, we like the horse porn over here, and dames and broads will be in their place in our party, and Trump has taken over, so that's all there is to it.
My close personal friend Paul LePage gets me. Don't you, Paul? Hey, Carol, how you doing, my friend? That's beautiful, beautiful. Yeah, that's the Trump party.
And as soon as the governor of New Jersey gets out of the slammer, he'll join us too.
He did his time like a man. He stood up his time like a man. He didn't rat nobody out. That's everybody gets pinched. That just happens.
We're gonna discuss refined Trumpism at length.
Yeah. The third
one is the party establishment wins, which is basically those that are in Congress double down, go after tax cuts, trickle down, and regulatory reform, depend on voter suppression and midterm election turnout to win elections, and give up on winning the White House except in very rare circumstances. Okay, and that's Ken Blackwell. And he comes out and says, I think Republicans need to be more aware that we are a majority party in the country.
Yes. Just take your shoes and socks off. You can count to 20. And then, it says, all the polls that are based on the voices in my head tell me very clearly that we are a majority party.
Sure.
Because, that's just clear. That's just science, Blue Gal. That's just plain science. Yeah.
And then the fourth one is the stalemate, which is the daily mantra among Trump's critics on the right, which is if we had only nominated anyone else, we would be winning.
Yes.
And this was my one tweet I've ever sent to Ben Shapiro. I sent this week. Ben Shapiro said, look, if we're going to have this immigration policy, we should have nominated Marco Rubio and we'd be winning. And I just said to him, oh, no, Ma. Oh, no, Ben. No, you wouldn't. Because
no.
Marco Rubio might be a nice guy and he might be a good dad,
mm-hmm.
but he can't win a battle of wits with unbuttered toast.
No. Well, it's also like St. Thomas Aquinas. I'm pretty sure I'm going back to my the 2 semesters that I did at Loyola.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if the universe were totally different than it is now, then
yes.
things would be different.
Exactly.
Yes, that's tautologically true. Yes, if everything were different and it weren't the way it is now and people weren't who they are and your party wasn't full of racists and assholes, then things would be different. So way to go.
Yep. And so these stalemate folks are basically Ted Cruz dead-enders and Michelle Bachmann fans. Uh-huh. Like, there is a core principle here that is endless and eternal and ever fresh and evergreen.
That's right.
And
that's
so
right.
if we just remember our principles, we know that down the road, it may take longer than we hope, but these principles maintain their structure and their beauty over time, regardless of what happens in this one election. So
I don't care what the freshness date is on this. It says 1982, but I think it still smells fine. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. So then going back to the beautiful flower of this article, refined Trumpism.
Yes.
OK, this is when you don't want to abandon all of the voters that voted for Trump. Right.
Because we're a center right nation.
We're a center. You want to make sure you bring those voters on with you.
Right.
And basically, this is wanting to go back to a time when we could pivot again. You know, when we could pivot. But the only way you're going to be able to do that with this enraged populist group of people that now have had a fire set under them.
Oh, I know the answer to this.
Go ahead.
The giant Men in Black flashy thing.
Yeah. People
just have them all stare at the Fox News for an hour and flash their memories and tell them it's 1988 again. And
exactly.
We're going to kick Dukakis' ass, I swear to God.
No, this is American Enterprise Institute, folks. And this is David Frum.
Oh, God.
And everything I read in this article about this, if I read one sentence to you and tell you it's Hillary Clinton,
uh-huh.
you will not blink. You will say, yeah, that's her. Sure.
Sure.
It's... you know, we used to be for cutting entitlement benefits and slashing taxes for the wealthy and passing trade deals, and we got to give all of that up.
Yeah. Okay. I have something to say about this, but I'll wait my turn.
Okay. The president.
I'm sorry. I'm laughing. I really am, because it's just, oh God, really?
This is the president of the American Enterprise Institute, Arthur Brooks, saying this quote. You know, Republicanism isn't that good of a product.
Shut up and eat your poop. I don't want to eat more poop.
The party needs to rebuild around providing opportunity to those who need it most.
You know, things and principles. That'd be good. That'd be good. Yeah, that's great. I believe that ground is currently occupied, but yeah. Okay, go for it, boy. You do it. You go there.
And then David Frum says, I think the Republican Party needs to make its peace with universal health coverage.
Oh, Jesus Christ. You know, well, he's a Canadian. What do you expect? Fucking Canadian.
It's really not. What does he say? We need to abandon our party's never-ending quest to slash taxes for the rich. Not only does it undermine our populist credibility, especially while the party is asking voters to endure cuts to Medicare and Social Security, it also soaks up money that could go to funding middle-class benefits.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's a Democrat.
Okay. Now, you and I talked about this before, so it won't come as a surprise to you.
Yeah.
There's a guy named John Rawls.
Yes.
Who's a philosopher, and he's got in his Theory of Justice. It's a big old book. I've got it on the shelf somewhere. I haven't read it in 20 years, but he's got what's called the Veil of Ignorance,
mm-hmm.
and it posits that if you are completely ignorant of the circumstances in which you were born.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
Invent a society where you would have a fair shot and a reasonable chance at a decent life, regardless of where you're born, and that's the society you should build.
Right.
So David Frum and Arthur Brooks, and I guarantee you Michael Gerson and David Brooks and all the rest of these clowns who jobs for life, have covered the Republican Party with a veil, pulled it aside and said, hey, it's the fucking Democratic Party.
Yep.
It is. They have reinvented the Democratic Party along Democratic Party principles with Democratic Party values to achieve Democratic Party ends. And that's great if you want to try to sell that as the new Republican Party. I know there's a whole bunch of, but maybe it's the case that your ideology is dead.
Yeah.
It's just dead. There's nothing left for it. Remember, conservatism in its purest form is simply supposed to be a moderating factor on progressivism or liberalism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we want to change the world. We want to do big things. We want to have big projects. We want to help people in all kinds of different ways. And conservatism is supposed to be the green eye shade realist who says, well, wait a minute. If you're messing with human institutions, you can have weird outcomes, and let's be real careful about that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I can live with that conservatism. It doesn't exist anywhere in this country. What we call conservatism in this country is white supremacy.
Yep.
White supremacy with a thin crust of oligarchy on top, pretty much like Germany 1929. And that's and if you're you know, crackpot billionaire industrialists funding racists to take over the government to give them everything they want in the name of greater Germany.
Mm-hmm.
So it is adorable that these guys are still promoting a completely non-existent conservatism to serve a completely non-existent constituents. But
yep.
I really do think it's time, desperately in need. We have a desperate need for a forum where people like you and I, even if it's not you and I, people like you and I can directly confront people like Arthur Brooks and David Brooks and David Frum and have an actual conversation.
Yeah.
And watch them piss their pants and run away.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is no argument left to be made. If your only argument is the Republican Party should give up everything that has been defined it as a party for the last 50 years and become Democrat light, we won.
We win. Yeah.
So, but you can't say that or they won't keep you on the New York Times as a conservative columnist.
Okay, but I want to just bring some humility into this discussion for just a moment, because we get letters every week from people, progressives, usually men, but not always.
Not just Soros.
Saying I can't, I may vote for Hillary, I may not, but she doesn't represent me. She doesn't represent my principles. She's not liberal enough. She's not who I think should be the nominee. I much more like the ideas of Bernie Sanders and Jill Stein, and I'm much more far to the left, etc. And bringing in all kinds of things to the conversation about why I'm feeling torn about this.
Yes.
And I first of all want to find out what state they live in, because that matters in terms of the outcome of the election, because I do think we can vote strategically. And if you are in Alabama or Mississippi, you may want to cast a protest vote. I wouldn't recommend doing it, because I really think Donald Trump and his supporters need a real clear message to be driven into the sea. But I just keep coming back again and again to who Hillary Clinton was talking to in that speech, and realizing that she was talking also to the Obama coalition, and she was talking to African Americans and young people about things that are so foreign to them in terms of their values. And you and I have talked before about lead with your values. And she started her speech by saying, I want to talk about jobs and I want to be the small business president, which is so Eisenhower. It just is.
It is.
I want to be the small business president. I want to make sure we're in innovation and helping small businesses grow.
I do too.
A nation of shopkeepers. That's what Hillary Clinton wants.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but something has happened that is just such a bad development for our democracy and our society that I really feel I need to devote time to this. And she starts talking about, she does her speech. But in that beginning moments, I'm listening to this and I'm thinking, she is making sure that she has nailed down the carpet in the room where millennials and the Obama coalition live.
Right.
To say, we are all standing here together and now we're going to approach this problem.
Yes.
There is a newspaper in Washington, in Virginia today that I just came across on Twitter, where the headline is, Trump reaches out, local black voters back away.
Run, Forrest.
And there were a lot of local news stories where you know, people were interviewed. African American voters were interviewed saying, oh, no. Oh, no. I'm, this week, because Trump is trying black outreach, right?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Hell no. I'm voting for Hillary. That's it. And there were several African-American commentators on television this week saying, and I want to give credit to CNN and MSNBC, because they are diversifying the voices that are on television. And that's important. Saying.
Sure.
I think I said this last week. Mm-hmm. African-American voters have not forgotten that Donald Trump was the architect of birtherism.
No. No.
And they're never going to forget that.
No. See, that's the thing. That ship is gone.
Yep.
It's never coming back.
Never, ever, ever, ever. And this is what I want to say to our correspondents who are writing in. And about, I would say, 2-4% of those of people who correspond with us regularly are African American.
Yeah.
And tell us that. I have to assume that the others are white. I can't always make that assumption, but in most cases, I think I can make that assumption. The white voters who are writing to me and saying, I have problems with Hillary. I particularly want to say to them, you know, this year it may just totally not be up to you at all.
Right.
Who gets elected president.
Right.
And it really may not matter whether you stay home or not. It depends on your state. It really does.
Yeah.
But, this may not be up to you at all. And that's okay.
Yeah.
It is okay if Black Twitter elects the next president of the United States.
I'm fine.
Everybody should be fine with that.
It's fine. That's the country I want to live
in. That's the country that we all want to live in.
Yes.
Where that is represented.
Well,
so I'm off. And it's not up to me to give my endorsements. I'm not trying to give an endorsement stamp and say, well, Blue Gal says it's okay if Black Twitter selects the president, so I guess it is. No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying this is the country we live in.
Yeah, and this is the direction we're headed.
Yeah.
And this is the direction we should be. This is a country founded on ideas, not blood and soil and skin color.
Right.
It's not supposed to be that way. It's supposed to be a place where we have big arguments about important ideas among people of good faith, regardless of their income and their social status and their color and their religion, etc. That's the country we're supposed to live in. We don't live in that country anymore. If we lived in that country, then the spectrum of political debate would range from Bernie Sanders to Hillary Clinton. That
exactly.
would be the left to the right. Mm-hmm. We don't live in that country anymore. And the analogy I used this week was, this is not the Apollo 11 election.
Yeah.
The Apollo 11 election is Barack Obama, a man on an alien world. Humanity united, just everyone, stop what you're doing. Look at that amazing thing over there.
He landed on the moon.
Oh, my God. It's one small step for a black man in America. This is great.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that Hillary Clinton being elected wouldn't be historic, because it certainly would.
Yeah.
I'm not diminishing that at all. But this is not the hopeful, everything is going great, this efficient electoral machine is going to get this guy elected with a mandate. It's going to be awesome. And people around the world are going to applaud. No, this is the Apollo 13 election. This is the election.
Just get us home.
Just get us home. Yeah. No, we're not landing on the moon this time. Sorry. If all I want Hillary Clinton to do is to pilot this crippled disaster of a craft back to without everyone, I'm okay with that. I wish it were not true. I wish that weren't the election we were having. I'd love to have another and another and another.
Thank God it's Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, honestly.
Because of anyone in the world who can take a rolling pin and an electoral college and a
and a beating
and masking tape and duct tape and tape it all together and bring oxygen into the ship, because she's competent to do that, just like Apollo 13. What do we got on hand here? Oh, okay, we've got Congress. Okay, sometimes they're a piece of shit, but
yeah,
they are what they are. We've got the, you know, ocean liner of the federal government that turns, you know, a quarter of an inch a day.
Yeah.
And we've got all of these people. I have to appoint, how many people does the president appoint? 800 top officials and 1,000 below that then. And, you know, okay, so we have this administrative executive office that requires a real understanding and competence about detail.
Yeah, and government.
And government.
How government and, works.
Right. Yes. There is no one. I mean, Barack Obama was absolutely right. There is no one on this planet. Not Bill, not me, not anybody, not Joe Biden, not anybody who is more prepared to do that, to turn the ship around.
Yes.
And bring everybody home safely, whether she'll ever be thanked for it or not, than Hillary Clinton.
Enormous flaws and all. And
right.
What the
right.
reason that analogy came to me this week is the argument they have over stirring the tanks. And it was Jim Lovell. Because they're arguing over, what'd you do? Blah, blah, blah. You know, Hillary's too nice, she's too this. Oh my God, I could have had Bernie. Ah! And because you're going to bounce around this.
You did Bernie and then you faded out. So start from there.
And so Jim Lovell says, stop it.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not saying you should stop it or who you should vote for. But Jim Lovell said, look, we can bounce around this capsule for the next 5 minutes, but we're still going to be in the same situation.
Yep.
And pretending it isn't going to work this way and pretending that Jill Stein is just going to come along and she's going to solve everything is I get the hope. I really do. I get the impulse. I really do. But this is what we have. We have this damaged craft and we have one of two people who's going to pilot it in the next 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And you can yell and scream and pound on the walls all you want, but that's the reality we're facing. So. Mm-hmm. That's the reality I am now comfortable with. We said all along, look, we support Bernie. We like Bernie. We think Bernie's policies, by and large, are pretty terrific. But we're going to vote for who Bernie's going to vote for.
Mm-hmm.
And Bernie.
Well, and I want to let's spend a moment talking about our revolution and the movement that is starting to take off, and whether or not that's where that's going to go. I'm not quite clear on whether this is really going to be a political action committee or it's going to be something that really. Changes things in terms of getting people elected to small offices. I think that would be awesome. But middle child sat in her room upstairs with her laptop.
Computer.
And watched the entire live stream of our revolution. And she came downstairs and she wore her Bernie shirt to school today, by the way.
You did?
Yep. And she said she was not sad. She was not crying. She had not been out of shape. But she said, there's really nothing for me to do for them yet.
Right.
And I thought, oh, my God.
Yeah.
What a lost opportunity. Because to have that energy of a 14-year-old who is really cares so much and has issues that she cares about. And the issues she cares about are things like fracking. And she really cares about that. Like, she gets that. She gets that issue. She gets that they're putting chemicals in the earth that might hit the water table. And then they pass laws that you can't tell the people that drink the water in the water table what those chemicals are.
Right.
And the government can't test the water table or check things out. That we are being deprived of information about the water we drink. She really gets it. Like this one issue, it really matters to her. And then we got Teen Vogue in the mail. And Teen Vogue, by the way, is a little magazine. And, you know, I know I'm going all over the place here, but I'm coming to a conclusion. Teen Vogue is a little magazine with a lot of fashion, a lot of advertising of makeup, drugstore makeup. And, you know, 13 fragrance samples fall out of it. And what shoes should you wear with what? But the themes that the editors of that magazine have are interracial, transgendered. They have transgendered models. They have, I found out my best friend was gay is an article in Teen Vogue. This is a very, let me put it this way. This magazine knows so much more about what the future of the millennial movement is.
Yes. Yes, they
than
do.
Than anyone in David Frum's camp.
Pay attention.
Because they're looking for a market, right? They've done their market research.
And aging neocons are, you know, I what was it? I was thinking ADHD is aging dirty hippie disorder.
us.
That's us. And I'm okay with that. I've lived a full life, Blue Gal. I'm ready. No, not at all. But it is really important to understand that there is an entirely different generation coming along who aren't just younger, who don't just access information differently than you and I do, but who are so far sold on issues that we fought and bled over for years. Yep. It's not even an argument anymore. It's just a given. And you got to get to them and make a place for them at the table. You have to.
And so they had an interview with Hillary Clinton.
Ah.
And it made me cry because
impossible.
It was a one
page
impossible. I never cry. It was a one page interview, and then it had a picture of her on the other side. So it's, you know, and then you turn the page and it's transgender and gay and it's everything else. It's things. I mean, when you think of how far we've come, my mother turned the palest shade of white the first time there was a douche commercial on television and I'm sitting in front of her, you know, like,
I don't think that's appropriate on television. I don't.
You know, so we have come so far in terms of discussing real issues with our tweens and teens that we and perhaps there's a whole debate to have about lost innocence, and we can have that debate some other time. But
and freshness.
And freshness.
Not so fresh. Not so fresh feeling.
The way my mother explained it to me in the 70s was, well, some ladies think they don't smell fresh down there.
Down there. You know, ladies, if you want to avoid that not so fresh feeling, don't vote for the orange Hitler.
Because he doesn't think about down there. He only thinks about it one way.
That's right. He only wants you for one thing.
Anyway, this article, this interview with Hillary Clinton, and it was about how does the reader of Teen Vogue change the world? That was how the editors of this magazine wanted to approach. It was, you know, Hillary Clinton on world-changing women, that kind of thing. How do you change the world, Hillary? How do you do that? And she was fantastic in that she said, this is what made me cry, she said, find an issue you care about and work for it.
What?
And that it wasn't vote for me. It wasn't run for office. It wasn't...
Tweet your ass off.
Tweet your ass off. No. It was what she did in college.
Yeah.
I care about children. Yeah. I care about children having their legal rights, right? And if you've listened to Tim Kaine talk about his career, you know, I wanted my African American housemate to be able to get an apartment that was vacant where she was told no and I was told yes.
Uh-huh.
And it was such a clear case that I went and became a housing lawyer.
Right.
Easy, because I cared.
Yeah.
So
multiply that by a million and a whole bunch of problems get solved.
Yeah. Exactly. Yep. And so find an issue you care about. And if it's transgender rights, if it's women's rights, if it's children's rights, education, college loans. I mean, she didn't even have to go there because those issues are all throughout the pages of Teen Vogue. Like that's all, you know, in between the tampon ads and the fragrance samples and lip gloss.
That's all given. That's all just
Walgreens, right?
Yeah.
But that is, like I said, because they know those women. Those voters,
right?
So well, you can look at that and say, "Oh, it would be nice if David Frum had access to Teen Vogue." Look, this is what your voters are; these are who they are, and I am proud that Hillary Clinton knew enough to say, you know, I think somebody, Huma Abedin, probably said, you know, Hillary, I think you need to sit down with Teen Vogue for 15 minutes.
Okay,
so
all right.
Yeah, and Grandma did. And
she did. Yeah,
and
okay.
And she told them that she spoke from her own experience, that find something that you care about. Yeah. And then find out what to do about it. And maybe it's write a letter to the editor, maybe it's podcast, maybe it is run for office.
Hey, be an election judge, you know? Exactly. Run for water reclamation district.
Mm-hmm.
Sit be a PTA, a volunteer at your school.
Totally see Middle Child on the water reclamation district bringing her artwork.
Yes.
She'll have a trifold with here's where the water is, mm-hmm. and here's what we're not allowed to know about it, and here's the faucet where we drink it anyway. Why are we doing this?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And you notice I put a foil painted foil on the faucet so that, and it turns the knob. She'll have a trifold with the faucet with the handle actually turns.
Yeah, wearing her that kind of cute. Wearing her business jacket and her zombie bait T-shirt. Because that's the house we live in.
That is, and that is the wonderful daughter I have. Yeah.
Now, if you want a whiplash, go from Teen Vogue to MSNBC.
Yeah, let's just finish up real quick with, because we're over an hour now.
Yeah.
The people upstairs at MSNBC, the suits upstairs, seem to have lost their mind over this week.
Yeah.
It seems to me.
Yeah. Their major narrative has always been both sides. This is, you know, you hear us say this on the podcast every week. You start looking for it. You see it everywhere. But really, this week was like National Both Sider Week.
Mm-hmm.
This week was when every clown and hack and stooge and you know, and potted plant on television all got the same fucking memo, which is, we are going to play the both siders game because Grandma Hillary has called out her opponent, and rightly so, as a racist, and read all of the things that he has done to prove that, yeah, he's down with that, and that is the Republican Party.
Mm-hmm.
And so one after another, all week long, on MSNBC, this is what cracks me up. There is a belief, perhaps, a sense that liberals say fuck too often. You know, we're too strident. We're too, I don't know, we tell the truth too much. We put uncomfortable words in rows, and then we say them out loud to people, and it makes them very uncomfortable. Now, speaking for myself, I can swear all day long on my blog, but I know how to wear a tie, and I know how to wear shoes. And I've been on television before, and I've been on radio many, many times. I know how to not behave that way. But broadly speaking, people like me are not allowed anywhere near the national conversation. Right. And one of the reasons I've been given has been, you know, liberals are just too strident, man, just too edgy. So as I was mulling over my life in exile on behalf of all liberals everywhere who are not allowed anywhere near the fucking camera, I turn on MSNBC, and what do I see? What do my eyes see before me?
I don't know.
Was Lawrence what?
Go ahead.
The first thing I saw was Lawrence O'Donnell handing his show over to Glenn fucking Beck. And I went, my goodness, that's a strange thing. I made little wiggles on my eyes, and I opened them up again because I figured I must be having some sort of stroke of some kind. I must be having some – but no, Lawrence O'Donnell – interviewed Glenn Beck. And then the next day, Chris Matthews put the aforementioned Ann Coulter on TV to promote her horrible shit pile of a book. I thought, well, that's weird.
Well, they've done that before with her. And I said to you, that's not necessarily a one-off, but happening within the context of this week, it certainly stood out. Yeah.
And then I went, oh, my back hurts and I should lay down for a while. Because it was very confusing. And, you know, I'm not very smart, and I'm figuring this must be just some sort of crazy coincidence. And then the next day, I turn on the trusted newsman, Chris Hayes, who put the Southern fucking Avenger.
Yeah.
You know, Rand Paul.
With the wrestling mask with the Confederate flag across it.
He's
taken that off, right? He's now a new person.
5 minutes ago, after having been a racist asshole his entire life and built a whole career and profitable one at that on being a racist asshole, 5 minutes ago, he suddenly, the scales fell from his eyes, Blue Gal, and he suddenly saw the light and he realized, hey, that Confederate flag might offend people. Maybe we shouldn't do things like that, which now qualifies this person who thought that maybe the assassination of Lincoln was a good idea. And bragged about raising a toast every year on John Wilkes Booth's birthday, which I have never done. I have never gone that far. But this guy is on my liberal TV being interviewed by Chris Hayes. And he was put on there because he has repented of his sins. He is now qualified to explain first that the very best way to deal with racism is to ignore it. Secondly, also too, very important, it really is all about both sides, you know? It's the dehuman behavior and the right, Blue Gal, because that's the fucking memo that Phil Griffin sent to everyone on air. You sons of bitches better have a conservative on. He better be hard right. And we're going to play this both sides game because that's our meal ticket, boys and girls. If we start, if we backslide in being the liberal network just because the conservative movement and the Republican is in fact a demonstrably racist, monstrous person, we all go home. You're all fired. So let's play it up, people. So I get Chris Hayes putting the Southern Avenger on television talking about racism and both-siderism. This was immediately followed once again by Lawrence O'Donnell handing his platform over to Ben Shapiro, who you might remember went on CNN and called Donald Trump a turd tornado, which, I don't know, as a strident liberal, I might say that on television and that I'd never get work again, but that'll never happen because that's never going to happen to me. This was all week long, interspersed between these hard right-wing lunatics being given full employment by MSNBC. You would find Michael Steele saying, well, you know, both sides, and Chris Matthews saying, well, you know, both sides. And it was surreal. It was absolutely this bomb went off of a speech by Hillary Clinton, and the reaction from the Beltway press was, holy shit, we have to hunker down, raise the drawbridges, and it's all hands on deck. Everybody get with the fucking program. It's both sides, both sides, both sides from now until doomsday. I don't care what you have to do, what you have to say, but nobody's sleeping and nobody's going home until everybody has a hard right-wing guest on television to prove that we're not a liberal network, that we are a news network, that we believe both sides, the racist crazy ones and the factually liberal ones. And the net effect of this, Blue Gal, I think, is really kind of terrifying, because what it means when you put Glenn Beck and Ann Coulter and the Southern Avenger and Ben Shapiro and Ben Dominic and on and on and on your liberal TV show as serious people is that you are now redefining what it means to be able to conserve away from David Brooks or Michael Gerson or Mitt Romney or John McCain or whoever you want to pull out of a hat as a definition of what used to be thought of as that. And now it's just anybody who isn't quite as crazy and racist as Donald Trump. Anybody who went 9/10 of the way down the racist road, but pushed back slightly at the very, very end. Those people are now being given credit for their edgy, insightful, suddenly noticing the Republican Party is full of Republicans. And that's the real danger, is that isn't that Donald Trump is defining deviancy downward. It's that people who are 9/10 of Donald Trump, people who are Ted Cruz supporters, the ass clowns who were his campaign managers, are now on television as regular commentators. And
okay, but I'm going to ask you a Dirk Glassian question now.
Sure. I love
Dirk. And I can't draw out this podcast any longer than it is, but I need to ask you this question.
Hit me, baby.
These folks are being moved into the center spotlight of what it means to be a Republican. For whom?
They are the ones you can point to and say, even the Southern Avenger, even Ben Shapiro realizes
who is the you who is doing the pointing?
The good people who own and operate Comcast MSNBC.
They're the ones that are putting these folks on.
Yeah.
Who are the people that are pointing to those people and saying, oh, these are now who Republicans are?
Oh, I don't know yet. I have no idea.
Well, I think here's what I think. You and I and some other people, in fact, many of our listeners, mm-hmm. are in the very deep end of this pool.
Yes, we are.
To the point where we have developed gills.
Yes, we have.
And we can swim over our head in this kind of political water, see very clearly, you know, our eyes are fully adjusted to this world where MSNBC and CNN and Fox even.
Sure.
You know, that window on the world, we know all the players. We speak in that language. We can talk about it. We know the history of it.
Yep.
We have an encyclopedic knowledge of where everyone has been, where they're going, what this environment means. And but I think sometimes being in that water, we think that's the whole universe. And by thinking that, if Chris Matthews were somehow to be at a restaurant with us and say, well, you know, my show is what democracy is. That's what democracy is I have people on my show and we talk about this and they're the people that make decisions for everyone in America. So that's democracy right there.
Mm-hmm.
You and I would laugh.
Sure.
But I think sometimes we may fall into that trap of the media, the blogosphere, is democracy, is the world, is where everyone, that this is what matters. This conversation is the only one that matters when it comes to making these decisions and making this worldview. This worldview is what is reality.
Well, let me push back a little bit. I hear someone at the door,
sure,
by the way.
Now, do you hear what I'm saying, though?
I absolutely
do. Ben Dominic and Ben Shapiro being on what used to be perceived as a liberal television show, mm-hmm, shows us a Teutonic shift in our world as to what matters to people who have control over our lives.
Right.
And there are places on our street where that isn't the case.
Absolutely.
Not alone, let alone out in the big wide world.
I agree. Okay. Let me put it to you this way. I think you would probably agree that the level of discourse in this country, mm-hmm, has changed radically in the last 20 years. It has, mm-hmm, so far, if you were to go back to 1988, you would not recognize the Republican Party.
Yep.
It began with Newt Gingrich teaching Republicans to lie and slander in front of a microphone every single time they opened their mouths.
Right.
And it began with Rush Limbaugh and the American Spectator. I forget who the crackpot right-wing billionaire is. Richard Mellenscaife, playing the outside role. They, yep, were the ones who were smoking the place up and getting things moving and getting the ball rolling. And then Newt Gingrich was the inside man. He was the one setting up, mm-hmm, witch hunts. He was the one setting up impeachments. He was the one dragging the Clintons down over and over and over again, mm-hmm, creating this dominant two-stroke media narrative that the Clintons are corrupt, liberals are monsters, liberals are evil, liberals cannot be trusted, liberals are traitors. And I've listened for 20 years now, more than 20 years now. And it's only gotten louder and stronger. It's gotten louder and stronger because people like Rush Limbaugh and, well, not Rush Limbaugh personally. He's still on the outside. But his imitators, like Hugh Hewitt, are now key members of Meet the Press. The people who are dedicated to taking down the federal government and calling people like you and I traitors as a matter of strategy, tactics, just to get what they want, have taken over our media. And have moved the conversation so far to the right that even suggesting that maybe you shouldn't put on the Southern fucking Avenger caused Chris Hayes' hackles to go up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know about you, but if you control the inside political process and you control radio and you control a significant portion of television and you've spent 20 years dumbing down your base so that they will actually believe crazy things, I would say that the people who in the media and their enablers in politics who set the agenda, who control the frame of the debate, who decide who gets to be at the table and who doesn't get to be at the table, are tremendously important people. And I would say that their influence has waned somewhat, but it still is the case that really horribly, disqualifyingly lying monsters like Bill Kristol have been normalized. Newt Gingrich is the sort of beloved grandpa of the right who gets to go anywhere he wants. And that is an incredibly unhealthy thing for democracy because what we've taken what was a decent, if rickety, two-party system and dragged it so far to the right that just getting back to a healthy conversation is now nearly impossible. And the reason.
Okay, but now since this is a healthy conversation, I'm going to,
yes,
push back again.
Sure.
And I don't want to have the last word here. I just want to, because we really do have to stop.
Yes, you do.
But and we can continue this next week or at another time.
Uh-huh.
But it does seem to me that everyone listening to us realizes that you are speaking from the standpoint of a white male American who sits in front of cable news for most of the day. And I think that's what I was saying about the pool and our gills and eyes adjusting to,
yeah,
that.
Well, no, listen,
I'm sorry. I don't have the article in front of me. Okay. There was an article today somewhere, and I can't remember where it was, and I apologize for that, talking about our revolution and whether Bernie Sanders giving an hour-long speech and speaking via web to his email list was really making a difference or not, and asking that question and making the point that the earth changing and the agenda changing movements that have happened in the past 50 years, while we've been talking about all of these media changes,
mm-hmm,
have not been top-down movements, have been bottom-up movements.
Sure.
So the gay rights movement, the Fight for 15 movement, Black Lives Matter, abortion rights groups, Code Pink, the transgender readers of Teen Vogue are all bottom-up movements that have nothing to do... They have had, and maybe this is more connected than you and I talking against each other on this. Maybe this is just all one big ball, and we really need to see, oh, the reason that it's bottom up, the reason that what has to happen is we just ignore cable news and we start from the bottom up and we take to the streets and we wind up setting agendas at the local level, which, by the way, the Koch brothers fully understand.
Yes, they do.
You know. Is that we the reason these are bottom up is because that world, that seat at the table, we're never going to get. We're never going to get
of course
on cable news. We're never going to be with Chris Matthews. We're never going to talk about that. So we have to move outside of that.
Mm-hmm.
And Moral Mondays is where we're going to start. We're going to start with, you know, North Carolina voting rights. That's where we're going to start.
Yep.
And so, I don't think you and I are having a fight here.
No.
But we're talking about two power structures that exist. And I just want to make sure that there's room when we're using our little tiny hammers to chip away at the cable news power structure,
mm-hmm.
and getting frustrated about that from time to time.
Yes.
That we remember that there are tremendous changes going on.
Oh, yes, there are.
And they aren't happening behind our TV screen.
No.
Because that is a very entrenched, powerful, moneyed thing. And so...
Well,
circling back, because we are going to end now, but
I would like to add one more thing, and okay. I don't want to last word because it's
just,
not frat.
I just want to circle back and mention that's what the alt-left is. The alt-left is, you don't hear about that on TV because the alt-left is Moral Mondays and Black Lives Matter and Fight for 15 and, finding a way for universal health care, those kind of things. Nurses are part of the picture. So
we're a secret. I just want to take this back to fracking for one second.
Yeah.
The fracking is the pumping of poison into our groundwater and not mm-hmm. telling people that it's there.
Yeah, yeah.
Every time, now you and I both know why the government was completely gridlocked during the Obama administration, right?
I think so.
Why was it gridlocked during the Obama administration?
Because there was a meeting at the Caucus Room Steakhouse with Newt Gingrich and Paul Ryan and Frank Luntz, a couple other people, mm-hmm. to decide that the way forward was to block everything that Barack Obama wanted to do.
How widely was that story reported?
I think only the blogs know about it.
Yes. Why is that? It would seem that one party going out of its way to commit acts of sedition and sabotage against mm-hmm. a new president, the first black president, would be a big news story. Why do you think it wasn't a big news story?
Because the Beltway media didn't want it to be a news story.
Exactly. Now, if you take Crazy Uncle Liberty, you know, and there are millions and millions and millions of Crazy Uncle Liberties out there, tens of millions of them. They run the Republican Party. They are the reason why nothing gets done in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And Crazy Uncle Liberty believes that, you know, men from Xanadu are controlling our thoughts because they beam from a platform put up by Barack Obama. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And he believes it 100%, swears by it, sends me email about it, has it all caps and so forth. What happens when I prove to Crazy Uncle Liberty that is just factually untrue? Does Crazy Uncle Liberty go, you know what, I got that wrong? What is
he blames the media.
And you know what he says when you finally corner him in a corner that he can't get out of?
Both sides.
Exactly. Now, somebody pumped this shit into our groundwater.
Yeah.
And those people need to fucking pay.
And taught them.
They need to pay. I know it's a little hammer. I know we're a million miles outside the Beltway. But those people need to have their head shaved and be marched through the streets wearing signs that says, I collaborated.
Yeah.
And it might be a complete and utter waste of time. It might be whistling past the graveyard. I agree. And it doesn't. And I believe alt left is a true and important thing. And I'm not discounting that in the slightest. But there will be no progress made as long as our media believes it's their job just to step out of the way, let the crazies do whatever they want to do and report on the controversy. And mm-hmm. I will, to my dying day, try really hard to get the attention of the people who are in the ivory tower and beg them to please, for fuck's sake, stop wrecking my country. Because it's your country, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. I got a letter from an autism teacher today.
Yeah.
Because I helped her buy construction paper.
Yes, you did.
Sorry, guys.
You did. Speaking of local action. Yeah. Because she.
Thank you for your contribution to our classroom.
Mm-hmm.
What a success story for your son. Because I put on the letter to her when I sent her money for construction paper for her 3 to 5 year olds. And I used donor's choose, which I've talked about many times before.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're hugging me right now, Driftglass.
You bet I am.
The other room.
You bet I am. My wife gets upset for the right reasons.
Yeah, I do.
Is moved for all the right reasons.
Yeah. And I say I'm paying this forward because my son is a successful high school senior who is applying to colleges.
Mm-hmm.
And is, you know, he's taking Latin and he's doing all kinds of fabulous things. But I want to pay forward because of all of the teachers that helped him over the course of the past 17 years, from the day he was diagnosed until now. And this particular teacher has the same kind of early intervention classroom, ages 3 to 5,
mm-hmm.
of children with language delays. And she's in Tennessee. And she needs to go to Donors Choose to get construction paper for her fucking classroom,
mm-hmm.
which makes me so mad.
Yep.
But she says, what a success story for your son. I wish him the very best as he continues to further his education. Thank you for sharing how an early intervention classroom like mine helped uh-huh. prepare your son for where he is today.
Uh-huh.
And I'm sure I told her in my note that she was planting seeds every day that blossom every day.
Yes, they do.
And so I hope that made a difference for her. I think it probably did.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's close.
Sure. Well, that young man.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
We have to. Man is going to be coming home from senior high school. With his buddies.
Any minute now.
Any minute now.
He's going to want pizza.
He's going to want pizza?
Yeah.
So, and he's going to want to tell a student newspaper that he edits.
Yep. Yes, he is.
And he's going to want to talk electoral politics. And what do you think is going to happen in Virginia's 12th? So.
He you know, is indeed.
All I'm
he
is saying
indeed.
Is.
His, he that's is his, indeed.
That's his that's mom his talking. That's what
yeah.
happens.
Yeah. No, he really does. He wants to talk about what is a moderate. That was his question the other day in the car. What is a moderate? You know, there are moderates in this country. Oh, really? Let me tell you something about moderates.
Yeah.
I kind of set him straight on that, but
that conversation is going to require a lot of tequila. So. All right. You know what we do each week?
We do each week. We post an internet kitty to our Facebook page and website sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitty is Malcolm. Malcolm is mostly white fur. And he has the advantage of being an outside kitty a lot of the time, where he can roll in the dirt and get scratched by any and all neighbors who might want to be blessed by scratching him behind the ears. Malcolm says, "Hey, come on over and scratch my head. It's a gift from me to you." You can visit Malcolm at our Facebook page and website. You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com. where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions! Letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. And don't forget our Amazon link at our website. We believe in buying local, and we also believe in shopping Amazon with our link if your alternative is a big box store. A special thank you to a podcast listener who sent us via Amazon some foldable silicone wine glasses.
Wine on the
they
go.
They are made of, it's wine on the go.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're these stemless wine goblets made out of silicone, his and hers, mm-hmm. and you can crush them and fold them up and put them in your pocket and pull them out and boing, they're ready. They're ready to have wine poured into them. You don't want to squeeze them too much while there's wine in there.
No.
It might overflow. But
no.
They have a his and hers label on each one, and they're hilarious. We will be using them for wine on the go.
Yes, we will.
Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution. You can too. See our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, for details. Both our PayPal and postal address information is there at professionalleft.blogspot.com. Please rate our show on iTunes or Stitcher Radio, and thank you for doing that. Hey, Drift Class, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties are rushing to corner the alt-left cafe press swag market.
Swag.
Swag, baby. That's where the money is. That's where all the Soros bucks are going to come from.
His alt-left t-shirts?
Alt-left keychains and t-shirts. Oh, man. Keychains. We're rolling in it. We got warehouses full of this stuff.
Yeah. Hey, and the kids are home. Perfect timing.
All right. Love you, baby.
All right. Love you, too. Bye.
Bye.
Let's think about living.
Think about living.
Let's think about loving.
Think about loving.
Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the popping and the loving, lovey dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2016, Drift Class, Blue Gal Podcast.